Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tonight, I'm gonna kill two birds.
Come on to the rock show. Come on to the people's show. Come on to the premiere show. SmackDown.
It's the 20th of January in the year of our Lord 2000. The second week in a row, Sleepy Hollow is top of the charts in the box office. The only notable video game to be released in the second week of January is Jane's FA-118. Oh, a must-have for flight simulators from 20 years ago. And still, because we clearly haven't been worshipping the old gods enough, Westlife's I Have a Dream cover is still, for the 300th week in a row, the number one song on the charts.
I am delighted with this news.
Uh-huh. But what was happening in a little company known as WWF? Was there a pay-per-view coming up named Royal Rumble 2000? And what was going to happen in the main event of that? The answer to these questions and more can only be found here, right now, on the Cult Audit Classic SmackDown Review. You're joined by two men who are doing a Lanny Poffo in WCW. We're both self-isolating and making the most of it. You're seeing, of course, Matthew Gregg and his lovely, lovely co-host, Tom Campbell.
How the hell are you? I am the genius of world-renowned, and things to do in the house can now no longer be found. It's been 2 weeks since we've been locked in. And I'd like to thank my good lady and Pablo, neither of which have chosen to try and kill me in my sleep, for having to live with me 24/7. It's an honour and a privilege. I'm so excited, Matthew, because time of release, I am mere hours away from finishing my 2 weeks in isolation.
Oh, fantastic.
As I develop symptoms, just as we were going into our work from home system at Cultaholic. So I was told 2 weeks self-isolation. So tomorrow I get to go on my first daily government-sanctioned walk, and I am living for it. I'm picking out an outfit to wear to Tesco and everything.
It was like, well, I've been in Germany with all the Italians and Polish people and all the melting pot of the diddler virus, as it were, according to the news. And so I self-isolated for 2 weeks just to make sure. It's like, well, no symptoms here. Who wants to hang out? Lads? Lads? Oh, I see. Everything's gone to poo. Right. Oh, okay. I've misunderstood the situation. Now I get it. Back inside then. And luckily for me, I have Doom Eternal to keep me going. And I would like to thank the makers of the game, Bethesda, for giving me ulcers as I'm stuck on the penultimate boss. No, not the last boss, the one before that. There's a lot of pride and dignity to be stuck on the last boss of any video game, but the penultimate one, Tom.
Oh, mate.
The penultimate.
It's like you are permanently in the number one contender's battle royal before you have to face Brock Lesnar.
But well said. It's like losing to Rodney.
From the Mean Street Posse or from Only Fools and Horses?
You know what? I'll leave it ambiguous Rodney.
We had a chat on the phone the other night, didn't we, Baff?
We did.
And we were talking about non-wrestling-based games that we should play. Because we're not going to see each other face-to-face for a couple more weeks at the earliest. So I feel like we need to do something that isn't based around watching wrestling from the early noughties. My brain went to RuneScape, but I don't know if it's two-player.
RuneScape. Good God. two-player? What, you mean just via a website?
For me and you, just to have a little play on. But this is the reason I was bringing this up is because I was going to ask if you listening to this, wherever you are, presumably in your homes, could tweet at Matthew Gregg or at Tom Campbell suggestions for non-wrestling games that Math and I can play during the great lockdown of 2020. Just so we're not always talking about old wrestling, really.
There we go. So when we come out of our bunkers and people go, what have you done? We can't just talk about the Big Show's terrible run in early 2000.
Exactly, exactly.
Tom, I like the bit of the show where you bring us into the world of wrestling, into the bubble, as it were, with a Dave Meltzer wrap-up.
Okay, so Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer newsletter for this week. Before Matthew starts talking about what happened on SmackDown this week, let's take a look at what Dave was talking about in the Wrestling Observer. And, Math, mate, this is the week. This is officially the week... that WCW absolutely falls apart.
Oh, is this the week before Sold Out?
Oh, allow me to spin a yarn for those who do not know. So, WCW have a pay-per-view coming up. It is called Sold Out. It is at the end of January. And it all looks nice. Bret Hart is the WCW World Heavyweight Champion. And he is in the main event against Sid Vicious. That'll put some butts in the seat. It's Bret and Sid in the main event. We also have a triple threat theatre between Chris Benoit and Jeff Jarrett. That'll be good, won't it, Math? Jarrett and Benoit wrestling three times.
You know what? That sounds like a good pay-per-view, and I don't think anything could possibly have gone wrong, especially because this is the 20th of January that we're talking about on SmackDown, and Sold Out was the 16th of January. So I assume everything went all right there, Tom.
Exactly. Well, here's what went down.
Go on, Tom.
It is a very, very much wrestling Curb Your Enthusiasm. So, just days before the pay-per-view, Bret Hart suffers a concussion and he is off the show. There's been some concern about Bret Hart since December after he took a good old welly from Goldberg and has just had some trouble with his vision and generally been feeling off, and he's now been diagnosed with a concussion. He was set to be in the main event. That is now not happening. Okay, fine. We'll find a replacement. The show will go on. Jeff Jarrett, around about the same time, was in a steel cage match with Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
This was on Monday Night Bruno, right?
This was on Monday Night Bruno. And Jarrett got hit with a Superfly splash by Snuka off the top of the cage. Very impressive. However, in the process, suffered a concussion. And he said it was possibly the worst pain that he's ever felt in his life. And he is off the show. So four matches from the pay-per-view are now off because Jeff Jarrett and Bret Hart, both champs, have concussions. So they have to think of a new plan. And it's Vince Russo who steps into the board meeting a few hours after all this has gone down. And he's got the master plan, Math. He's got the solution to all of WCW's problems. He's fixed it, mate. He's fixed it. He stands in the boardroom and goes, bro, hear me out, bro. Hear me out, bro. We're going to do a Rumble match. We can't call it a Royal Rumble because that's owned by the WWF. We'll do a Rumble. And Tank Abbott is going to become the WCW World Champion. Bro, it's going to be great, bro. Do you know what the reaction was to Vince Russo's plan of action?
He was thrown through a window like Hitler in Danger 5. No, it's somewhere along the lines of that, though, Tom. I don't think it was very positive.
It was a metaphorical throwing through the window. So, as literally following this meeting, Vince Russo was demoted to a lower role within the writing team.
We all become a family of travelling acrobats.
This is from the Wrestling Observer. Sadly, not the Wrestling Acrobat. This is from the Wrestling Observer. While the idea of making Tank Abbott champion was not the reason for the demotion, It was symptomatic of destroying the foundation of the products and titles in Russo's changing concept of what pro wrestling is, and a concept not favoured by those in management who wanted the soap operas in addition to good wrestling matches, and felt that was also, based on their reaction, what the fans wanted, since management had gotten very little positive reaction or positive numbers and feedback in recent weeks. So that drag-along sentence from Dave Meltzer basically says it wasn't about the Abbott decision. It was basically the fact that Russo has been crap for quite a long time. And this was kind of the cherry on top of the crap cake that led them to go, do you know what? I think we're done with you as the lead writer now. This is a little bit dangerous.
Yes, I think they looked at each other and went, ah, Russo isn't quite the great military strategist that we once thought he was. But that's just part one of the Sold Out 2000 debacle. What's the next bit of news, Tom, that's somewhat relevant?
Oh, so there was talk about changing up the card, and one of the names that was put into the top of the card was Chris Benoit. And it was the belief that Chris Benoit deserved an opportunity. But this was born out of something completely different. So, Russo is gone, and it was believed, even before Russo had left, that the next person to take over the writing for WCW was going to be Kevin Sullivan. Now, history dictates that Kevin Sullivan and Chris Benoit have quite a storied past as a result of Chris currently dating. Was he dating or was he married at this point to Nancy Sullivan?
He was married by 2000.
They were married by this point. So there was a lot of personal vendetta between Kevin Sullivan and Chris Benoit. And there was this concern that now Russo was gone, Kevin Sullivan was going to take over the booking for WCW. And that was pretty much going to put paid to a lot of guys in the company who Russo had issue with. So with a lot of heat on Chris Benoit, long-time friends, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn and Shane Douglas, a few other names in this mix included Billy Kidman and Conan, were planning a walkout of WCW. And as a way of placating those people, Chris Benoit was told, you're going to be our number one guy from now on. Don't worry about all that stuff with Sullivan. We'll keep it over there. Bill Bush is going to come in for a bit. It'll be fine. You're going to be our top guy. You're going to be the world heavyweight champion. And as these meetings were going on, it was sort of realized that the other lads wanted out and they were going to be let out. And the consequence of all this, which is documented beautifully in other places, is that at the Sold Out pay-per-view, Chris Benoit and Sid Vicious headlined for the vacant WCW World Championship. Chris Benoit became the WCW champion and the following day left the company.
I mean, there's a lot going on here.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Right, with how late they discovered all this, by the way, they had to announce the main event of Benoit versus Sid on the pre-show.
Like, in fact, they announced
this is
the whole
how late
card,
they found
think,
out
on
everything.
The pre-show, didn't they? It was the whole card they had to change on the night.
Right, the Jarrett Benoit series became Billy Kidman against the Revolution. So he defeated Perry Saturn in a bunkhouse brawl. The very infamous Dean Malenko catches catch can match, where Malenko did he accidentally, deliberately on purpose, mean to eliminate himself after a rollicking 2 minutes 36? We'll never know, but certainly, if I was leaving company the next day, I wasn't going to give my best effort for Billy Bloody Kidman. And then also then the Wall defeated Billy Kidman in a caged heat match, which someone described as sounding like one of those women's prisoner films you used to see on TNT at midnight. And yes, Benoit beat Sid to booze, by the way, if you watch this on the network. It's not like, yes, finally, our guy. Yes, that's right. The little guy wins again. No, this is 2000. Sid Vicious was a bigger draw than Benoit for WCW at this point, so there's much booze. And it's one of these interesting things which I've considered. Sullivan says he was going to put the wrestlers in front of him and not about himself. And yet, when knowing they'd been given their releases by the company to, by the way, immediately leave to go to WWF, which is insane by itself.
Qualms release, wasn't it? There was no gardening leave. It was just, there you go, there's your contract, you're free agents, do what you like, which is ridiculous when there's a war on.
That's crazy. But Sullivan has always presented this like, look, what a good guy I am. I'm of the opinion that by Kevin Sullivan putting the world title on somebody, he knows he's leaving. He's not doing it for Benoit. He's doing it to go, look, guys, look, I did my thing. I think it was a political move by his point to show, like, look what a selfless person I am. The man who's leaving with the title the next day, I'm going to put the title on. That's a horrible decision. That's one of the worst decisions you could make for any company. But he went, no, look, see, absolutely no issues. And I think he just did it just to, you know, for his own benefit, because it absolutely did not benefit WCW in any way. It was quite harmful, quite ridiculous. And this preceded a ridiculously amazing series of title changes on Nitro with Commissioner Nash, because he beat Terry Funk on the pay-per-view here, where Sid Vicious defended the title against Nash, Ron Harris, Don Harris. Oh, that was it, right? So it's just amazing at this point. It really is the series of 3 or 4 days they had, no one leading up to this, all the changes that happened, all the incredible decisions take place. And that's why I spent so long talking about it, because it can't be stressed enough. This makes UFC 249 look well organized.
Big shout to Shane Douglas in all of this.
Oh, of course, as if there wasn't enough news here. Go on, Shane Douglas. Come on, guys. Who's with me? Looks around. Guys.
Yeah. So basically, Shane Douglas was one of the nucleus of people who were walking out of WCW at this point. Benoit, Malenko, Saturn Guerrero, and Shane Douglas. And Douglas was really up for going, yeah, let's all go over to WWF. Let's all leave the company. And then they all left the company without him. Which is, if it was anybody else, I'd feel like it was really harsh. But because it's Shane Douglas, it's quite funny.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of humour to be had here. Especially because, just for context, all of them, but Guerrero, were in the Revolution stable. So I imagine they're all going to show up with the little berets and going, that's right, Revolution, and whatever. They completely killed the mood straight away. And, yeah, they apparently were most interested in Perry Saturn, is a thing I've heard. And then Saturn went, well, can I bring my other guys over? They're like, oh, sure. I'm sure we could find something for, you know, Eddie Guerrero to do.
Isn't that crazy somewhere, to think that out of everybody in that team, the guy that you assume is just sort of there because his mates brought him in is the main reason that all the others were brought in. I kind of get when you look at it and you look at the WWF product of that time, Perry Saturn probably is the strongest fit.
It's almost like, oh, Jimmy Anvil Neidhart, you're great. What's that? You want to be in a tag team with your friend? Oh, okay, yeah. So let's see what this little kid's got from Calgary, is he? Oh, okay. Sold out 2000, and is it not? In this time of conflicted pay-per-views and troublesome times, with WrestleMania this year in 2020 looking rather similar to elevated enzymes of the liver mania we had the Great American Bash 1 year. So I think we'll move on to the thing that people have tuned in for, SmackDown 2000. So let's start. We start backstage with Triple H welcoming the rest of DX to Providence, Rhode Island. They're thrilled. Triple H expositions Raw, saying DX destroyed the Acolytes so well that tonight they get the night off. X-Pac says, yay! No, not you, X-Pac. Triple H, you have to wrestle Test. And then, let's see if I can imitate X-Pac here. Test! Triple H, it's okay, X-Pac. The winner of that match gets to be number 30 at the Royal Rumble. X-Pac, ooh. But what about Cactus, say the New Age Outlaws? Right, it's okay, he's not here. He's got a family illness. And that leads us into Widdy Woo, Widdy Woo, Widdy Woo, Widdy Woo.
Incidentally, and that line, weird to be mentioning it this week, when they go, Cactus isn't here, he's got a family illness. In 2000, everyone goes, oh, shenanigans. In 2020, oh, no, so that's him off Mania as well, then.
I was going to say, speaking of that, Undertaker is still in the intro to the 2000 SmackDown, where he should be, rather than risking killing AJ Styles at Mania with the Diddler virus. And here we go with a big bag of pyro. And speaking of big bags, here's the big show.
Oh my
God. He's walking the ring and he's dressed just like Ethan Suplee from Mallrats.
I wrote down here, out comes Hobo Big Show.
It is not a flattering look.
God, he looks rough here. My God. Put a bit of
just
pride in your appearance,
talking.
Man.
Crowd instantly chants for Rocky. And when Big Show doesn't transform into him, they go with asshole instead. Big Show says, "You people sit here and boo me. I take the time away from my family to shake your hands and kiss your babies." No, don't do that, Big
Show. Don't do that now. And you social distancing, mate. Boo! It's only in this particular year where a wrestler that promises to shake hands and kiss babies is a heel.
Right. Because I think you could ask him for spare change.
He does. Oh, why does he look so trampy this week? I just don't get it. I only thing I could think of was he was on like a family day out, and then someone rang him and said, "You know it's SmackDown tonight." And he went, "No, SmackDown's on Thursday, you dingus." "No, we tape on a Tuesday though." "Oh yeah, I forgot. I got on my way."
He went right from his shift at the docks to the Rhode Island arena. So he says, "No one back there likes me, and you want to know why?" And I'll put in brackets here, voice break. "Because none of you will ever be 7 foot." Womp womp. "Rocky's not going to win the Rumble. I'm 7 foot. I'm 500 pounds. I'm bigger than The Rock. I'll win my title back at Mania. I hate Rocky. Come out so I can shove your head up your ass. P.S. I'm 7 foot."
He says Rocky, "No one can be 7 foot two, and no one can be 500 pounds. Mate, by the time all this is blown over, I reckon I'm going to be about 500 pounds. The challenge accepted, Hobo Paul.
Yeah, you got the first out. You got the hard bit out of the way. Just the 7 foot bit.
I just got to get on the rack now, and I'll be fine.
Rocky shows up and Big Show's 500 pounds at the start of this. Will be 400 pounds sweating after hearing Rock's line of, "You're the people's champion? Hell, you can take the damn people." Where was that line 10 minutes ago? Is that drivel that we've just had? Rock puts over his specs. Did you know he's 7 foot? Before mocking him. Why are you booing me? Why? That's the impression he did. Causing Show to get so frustrated, his hat flies off.
And gets stuck in the air vent.
He goes, woo! Flies off. Guest director Benny Hill.
He then chases Rock round the ring to sped up music.
Well, walks fast. The Rock commentates himself. Maybe The Rock will walk down the ring just like this and stop midway down the ramp. Just like this. He's doing it as only The Rock can. But before he can reach the Show, Kane and Tori show up. Ooh. Tori gets to speak and makes Big Show sound like Harley Race by comparison. And the gist of this is Kane is big and therefore could also win the Rumble. But before he can do anything, here's Triple H and Steph. Triple H says, "If there's one thing I hate," crowd, "What do you hate?" "It's a bunch of egomaniacs." Crowd chant for Cactus Jack, and Triple H puts on a mildly scared face before carrying on and on and on. At this segment has outstayed its welcome like a Dolph Ziggler push.
He does say he starts a phrase quite well, then I think forgets it or has remembered it wrong, where he says, "Tonight the creative juices are floating through the air."
Metaphors.
He gets his metaphors all upside the head. Like, no, creative juices don't float through the air because they're water. They're liquid-based water. And unless it's raindrops, even then they fall. They don't float.
There was a good bit on The Sopranos, Doug Post and things, where it's like all the malapropisms that are on the show and there's stuff like people going, you know, what was it? I want to insert a bit of dysentery amongst the ranks.
I want Triple H's thing just to be always getting these phrases wrong. You can hey, Big Show, you can lead a horse to water. You can't throw a bird at a stone.
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't.
Tonight, I'm going to kill two birds. What with? Don't matter. Probably a pedigree.
A stitch in time means Jericho's not getting a push. Hey, moving on from this drivel.
No, never move on from this drivel.
Crowd chants slut at Stephanie. So Triple H gets the mic and goes, hey, don't talk about Tori like that. Poor Tori.
They say a broken watch is always right twice. And tonight, Kane, you're right. You are in a match.
One if by land, two if by sea. Main event is a three-way. Kane versus Show versus Rock. Lumberjack over the top rope match. Rock starts reiterating, but Big Show attacks him and he gets the call Kane the big red retard, which is sometimes censored and sometimes not, depending on the ratings that week, I guess. Rock is encouraged to not say the R word. That's why they lost Uggs. Anyway, Rock gans Raj like the dash for the last past year at Greg's, and that ends the opening segment after nearly 20 minutes.
Oh, it was a lot of talking, wasn't it? A lot of talking.
I thought it was
quite nice to have a break from a Triple H promo to start, but it's all right, we'll get one at the end.
Oh, good, yeah, he does another one later on where he goes, just so you know, Rock, you can have your cake and suck it.
Just so you know, Cactus Jack, they say a watched kettle never boils, but I'm watching you.
I love broken metaphor, Triple H.
This will now replace the Bulldog and Test Banter going forward.
Have you heard the story of the tortoise and the hairy man?
Prince Albert, you're in a match tonight against Bosman.
Anyway, we get a replay of the Acolytes from 3 months ago, the last time they were at the Friendly Tap. They had a big brawl with the locals because the bar was good to them after hours and deserved a plug, I guess. This location would be homaged in the No Mercy N64 game too, so those were some well-spent free beers by the Friendly
Tap. Oh, absolutely. I loved in No Mercy when you could fight in the Friendly Tap. That was brilliant.
The Unfriendly Tap, Tom.
The Unfriendly Tap, sorry. That was great, though, when you went backstage, you could do a pedigree on the pool table.
That's right. The Friendly Tap, that's where all the drips hang out. Anyway, X-Pac versus Test starts off the show, and why not? Test is the hardcore champion after beating Big Boss Man on Raw, ending Bossman's longest relationship in months.
Ending Bossman's only relationship that didn't end with somebody getting beaten up or cooked or killed.
So it could have been worse. Lawler gets a lovely line as Test still wearing the prisoner of... I've forgot my reference. He's wearing his big hell. Test's nose has been broken in more than the Ten Commandments.
It's a good line. See, Jerry Lawler can get these right.
Yes, he can. Mal pop for Test as he's against X-Pac, and even Gronk would be acceptable against Test. Spinning sidewalk slam is impressive, as is the big boot out of nowhere, but before Test can hit the big elbow, Road Dogg distracts the ref, and X-Factor ends it. Yep, back to dog piling on Test, even when he's got a championship.
They just can't leave him alone, can they? Like, he's now the top of a division, and he's still getting a shoe in.
Well, do you ever have one of those friends where you like him, and you do enjoy his company and you would help him whenever possible, but you do also enjoy taking the mick out of him wherever possible?
I think I am that friend.
Oh, Tom. Well, if you don't know anybody, then I guess you are.
No, we've got DJ Chop for that in our friend circle. Chop, if you're listening to this, mate, you still haven't paid your dues.
See, I am in on that in-joke. Yes. That's great. The rest of you, The rest of you suckers can just try to catch up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Backstage says something so inaudible that everyone in DX has to ignore him and move on and contemplate the idea of X-Pac versus Triple H in the main event of WrestleMania. And then we get a stunning debut of the Steve Blackman and Al Snow tag team who are walking backstage. Al Snow is still looking for a partner after Foley ditched him and he lost matches teaming with the Dudleys and the Hardcore Hollies. And he says Blackman is perfect. Foley had 3 personalities and Blackman has none. That's a good logic there.
But
Steve Blackman annoyed that he can't sue him for slander.
But which super unit could we put up against this new tag team of Al Snow and Steve Blackman, Matthew?
Oh, God, Tom.
Which new friendship can we put to the test against Al Snow and Steve Blackman?
From Triple H's broken metaphors to our favourite wrestlers, broken everything, Kurt Angle tonight teams up with the Bull God himself,
yes!
The British Bulldog. I can hear the cheers. I mean, let me take my headphones off. Yay! Oh, thank you.
Bulldog's back! and he looks as pepper army as ever.
I'm back, and I'm worse than ever.
He is now he doesn't even need to wrestle. He can just sit on the side and hold the tag rope.
That's right. Now in crispy barbecue flavour himself, he's back. On Raw, it was Blackman versus Angle again, but Bulldog crotched Blackman with his own stick to help him win. That's right, hoist by his own leotard. Angle has just been informed he has an unnamed opponent to face at the Royal Rumble, that he's not concerned with the guy he knows the country. I've written this badly. He's not concerned, comma. He knows the country would be devastated if he lost. Crowd boos. Angle says Providence makes some of the depressed states and the UK look good. So he's just insulted. Oh, with Britain, but DBS is so out of it, he just nods in agreement.
Yeah, he just doesn't. He just like arms crossed, like big chin out, nodding.
Yes, you're right. The UK is crap.
Whatever you say, I just want to get paid.
Yeah, whatever. Who's going to win the Rumble? Angle's going to win the match at Rumble because he's bizarre.
I won the European title with a broken freaking dignity.
Everything. With my sister watching the front row with a broken heart.
I won the European title with a broken freaking love of wrestling.
I won the IC title with a Brett, I'm effed. The Hall of Famer himself, the British Bulldog.
Not yet, he's not. It's been put off. Where's my Hall of Fame ring? And... Where's my Hall of Fame ring? You got that Hall of Fame ring?
He hit WrestleMania with a trash can, so it's been postponed.
WrestleMania got amnesia, it's forgotten the Hall of Fame.
What Bulldog? You're in a boat.
Bulldog Hall of Fame? What are you talking about? We never said that.
That was a joke.
We knew it wasn't happening, so we just chucked a load of random names in there. The Bellas, Liger, Bulldog, Batista. Yeah. It's not real.
Yeah, we thought you'd get it was a joke. You know, the Berserker was going to be next.
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe they knew it wasn't happening, so they just chucked a load of random names in there.
I tell you what if they get Bulldog Jr. to do a promo as British Bulldog Sr. Tonight, I'm going in the Hall of Fame, either I want to or not. That's right. Does the people want it? Tonight, in this Hall of Fame, I'm going to be the winner and not the loser. Terrible stream of consciousness promo was Bulldog would grace us with every time a live mic was put in front of him.
I want him in Dave Boy Smith Jr. in tight blue jeans, like spray tan level number 4. That's the Bulldog I want.
He looks like Hogan in 98.
Yes.
And you would have thought that this opening promo and getting insulted by Angle would be the highlight of this very prestigious SmackDown. Right, the match itself. So we start off, Kurt Angle blocks a kick from Blackman and pops the hips to suplex him over his head. And I quote, "Whoa!" Bulldog tries for the power slam straight away, but Blackman escapes by going over his head, kicks him, goes to the top rope for a gentle kickoff, and then pins him. That's the match, a minute 12. Why are you guys so harsh on the Bulldog because of this?
This match was a bit like when your mum made you play No Mercy with like your younger sibling and they're about 4. So they ain't got a clue what buttons they're pressing. So you're Steve Blackman, you do a rudimentary move off the top rope and pin them. That's what this was. Bulldog just on his back, done.
Oh, really? If you heard the microphone loud enough, you can go, "Angle, how do I kick out?"
Angle, I'm effed.
First match for the Bulldog and Angle team, a.k.a. Brodeen, like Cody. And somehow ends up being a better tag team than Bulldog and the Anvil from 98. God.
I think it's the
Moving
last
on.
As well, isn't it? I don't think we see these guys again.
No, I check Cage Match. There's a few more appearances for Bulldog because they've just signed that deal with Channel 4. They can't get rid of them yet. Maybe that's why they had the Rumble 2000 be so over the top and gruesome. It's like, oh no, we've lost our deal with Channel 4. Phew.
Bye, Bulldog.
Yeah, bye, Bulldog. Oh, God. So where we are. Oh, yeah, moving on. See, now I've just got in my head the Adol bottom jeans, boots, the blue fur.
Looking at her. She wants a title shot.
Where? I've got, he hit the floor only once.
That's all he needs, just the one.
He turned around and gave that big booty some smacks. Anyway, God, enough. Poor Bulldog. Moving on, at the Rumble, it'll be the Miss Rumble swimsuit competition, where Bulldog will throw trash cans at all their heads to see. No. So we get an unts video of the participants doing their Miss World shtick on Raw. Ivory again a heel for calling Lawler a pervert. Lawler's reply, yeah, so. And the cap again promises nudity. Sadly, so does Mae Young. Oh, boy. Yeah, more of that to come. More of that to wait. Oh, what a moosh boost that was. 1-800-COLLECT isn't paying us a damn thing. So here's the first ever Photoshop John Slam of the Week. Photoshop John, it's for your feet.
Photoshop John, pay him now on Ko-Fi.
Is it called Ko-Fi? I've been saying Kofi.
Is it Kofi? Oh, I might be wrong then.
Oh,
give him some money on Kofi. He'll fix some photos for you.
Let's ask Jack the Joe how it's pronounced.
Whichever it is, anyway, support your artists.
That's exactly, yes. Support your artists. Oh, artist singular, which is John. Slam of the Week is the Dudleys 3D-ing both members of the Hardys and then powerbombing them both through a table. That's a good look for them.
I wonder if it's something that they will keep doing.
And during the entrance of the next match, we get a mention of the just-purchased WWF... I beg your pardon, I've just burped in the microphone.
WWF burp!
I don't know where that came from, I beg your pardon. During the entrance, we get a mention of the just-purchased WWF New York.
Ooh!
More of that to come.
We nearly got ourselves a restaurant.
Yes. It ended up being a money loser in the end, but if I'm right, they sold it for a profit. Anyway, there's lots of stuff that happened with New York to carry on. And we get Matt Hardy versus Devon Dudley. Commentators mentioned the first ever tables tag team match at the Rumble is happening. So we get a fast-paced, bump-filled action.
This is Matt Hardy's first match back as well, isn't it? Am I correct?
No, he returned last week in the six-man.
I stand corrected. I will sit in my corner. I will prop
Bulldog's
head up.
I couldn't tell you what happened on Raw last week of 2020, but how dare you not remember Matt Hardy's big comeback. Anyway, crowd doesn't care about the action. They want titties. Bubba yanks Matt out the ring and shoves him into the steps with a DQ and then chair shots everyone and punches the ref. The Dudley set up tables by the entrance ramp, but Jeff knocks Bubba off the stage and he takes the amazing timber backwards bump that only Bubba could do. And Matt Hardy puts Devon through another table with a leg drop. Amazing stuff.
This felt like a big deal. This felt like a real shift. And it's something that will go on to put these two tag teams on the map. And it's something that stood them out from everything else. I'm racking my brain whether or not we've seen anything like this with non-main event guys in WWF.
No, their push hasn't been as sustained as I remember it. But ever since the No Mercy ladder match. But they are there on the weeks that they aren't being distracted by titties. Who else has been... Angle, I would say, is getting there week after week. But yeah, you're right. Sons of a sustained push. Oh, strap in, lads.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the New Age Outlaws visit the Friendly Tap. And the patrons love them. Also, the barman has one of the biggest mullets I have ever seen on an individual. Jesus Christ. It makes Barry Horowitz's look subtle. I mean... Did you see this mullet?
I saw the mullet and I saw the bar staff and the bar patrons when Road Dogg and Billy Gunn turned up. And I genuinely thought, and I don't know whether I've been in isolation for too long now, if I walked into this bar and I was greeted with this kind of fanfare and this kind of banter, I'd leave immediately. I just don't have the energy.
Yeah, I get what you mean. but obviously this episode is brought to you by The Friendly Tap for some reason. I don't know.
Well, it's just, we keep coming freebies back here, don't we?
Oh, yeah, that's how friendly this tap is. We can't keep away. And we get a replay of the thing we just saw with the Hardys. Replay show Matt Hardy flying through the table. Somehow managed to squish Bubba's face so he's cut open. So we get the maniacal look of Bubba standing up with blood coming off him. It's... That vacant expression would do Bubba very proud throughout this year.
I find it fascinating when you watch these old shows back, and it's only a small thing, and I'm sure a lot of it's obvious to many, but like in this day and age, if somebody gets accidentally bust open in a match, it's look anywhere but at that. Whereas in this era, that I doubt was meant to happen, that bit of bloodlet. So, but then it's like, zoom in on it, focus on it, don't let the camera leave Bubba Ray, look at all that blood. It's just funny how this compares 20 years difference.
Yes, and on the other show, Sold Out 2000, which I haven't talked about enough, Terry Funk versus Kevin Nash happened on pay-per-view, and it was a no-DQ match, and Terry Funk ended up bleeding a lot, because of course he would. And they pan out. They do a wide shot. They go, wow, look at the crowd here tonight in this empty arena. And that's how WWE was, even in 2000. They were like, no. Standard practices says we can't just focus on blood. That's not right. Meanwhile, on UPN, the network of Shasta McNasty. Haven't had that brought up for a while. Wait, backstage, Crash Holly wants something to do. But HTH Holly doesn't want to hear it, as he has China and Jericho at the Rumble. So he throws his cousin out the locker room and into Big Vis. Crash Holly is undeterred and wants a fight with Big Vis. And Vis goes...
We aren't far away from Crash Holly becoming a bit of a star in this company.
That's right. Like, that's, he wants something to do.
Yeah, and he's going to have something massive to do. Something that I think...
Yeah, Viscera.
...will put an into Once he's done with Viscera, he's going to have something to do in the next week or next month or so that's going to put him and an entire division on the map and kind of change a big element of wrestling.
Absolutely, and it's crazy how stacked the show is getting with all the cool stuff we're about to see.
Mm.
The Too Cool six-man tag match is brought to you by WrestleMania XV on DVD, which is being re-released in 2020, by the way. That and a bunch of other WrestleManias. You can get it at HMV. Apparently, it's uncensored as well.
It's also brought to us by PhoneFree.com.
That's right.
The movie The Beach, starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
That's right. Nominated for a worst raspberry for acting. And the only thing I know about this film, I haven't seen it, is the fact that they filmed, Thailand? I believe so. They absolutely scuppered the natural surroundings to make it look more beachy and paradisey, and were supposed to pay for it to be undamaged afterwards. But they were not able to do it. Any justice. They'd done that much damage that it could not be fixed. Oh, so it was a big lawsuit. And it was all irrelevant because the tsunami then damaged everything and it was restored to its natural glory.
Oh, blimey.
How bad would it be if the natural habitat and surroundings of a lovely area has been destroyed for a crap film?
You'd be devastated, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Sorry, there used to be a beach here, but Shasta McNasty blew it up.
Because they liked the ambience of the area, but they wanted to do a scene with a shopping centre in.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Didn't there used to be a waterfall here? Yes, but now it's a Starbucks.
They've changed a lot of how they film since then, which is good to hear. Like, there is scenes in a Transformers movie that was shot in Newcastle.
That's right. I have yet to see this, but I do know that Trent Seven and other wrestlers do also make a split second cameo.
Very split, yeah. But I don't know how long they're in it for and which scene, but I know that the Newcastle bits were filmed because, and please tell me if I'm wrong, there were some New York scenes they needed to pick up on, but it was too expensive to shut New York down. But shut Granger Street in Newcastle for a day at a tenth of the price. So they did that instead.
Oh, it's not even Newcastle.
It's presented
as if it's New York.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but it's not like in the film. It's like, meanwhile, in Newcastle.
No. It's just those scenes, and they're adapted to look like something else.
Oh my God, we're in New York, and you know it's chaos because they're all driving on the wrong side of the road, eating pasties. Right. Okay.
They just drove past the Tesco and the Black Garter in New York.
Here we are, in Trillions, New York.
Hey, what's Jack doing coming out of Rise in New York?
Anywho, and Too Cool are taking on China, Hardcore Holly, and Jericho. So the co-IC champions and Holly. Jericho insults everyone, saying the ring looks like the Mos Eisley band from Star Wars, and thankfully after wins the IC title, this Rumble, he'll never, ever... With the crowd joining in now, have to look at them again. See, it's funny how Jericho's evolved. That used to be a stick to annoy people, but now he's doing it for people to join in with, so...
Jericho made a fun comment when he said that the people in the ring made it look like the Star Wars cantina scene.
That was nice, wasn't it? The crowd were like, hey, that's a good reference.
He was brilliant here. I enjoyed his work here.
Yeah. More fast, quick action. There'll be a bit where Jericho beats down Scott Too Hotty and yells, come on, Scott Taylor.
Yeah, that was strange, calling him Scott Taylor.
That the recurring bit of getting names wrong. Silly Billy, that's Scott Too Hotty. Jericho saves China from Rikishi Driver. It all breaks down as Team IC and Holly ignore the referee and beat down Kishi in the corner. And it's called off by the ref. Woohoo. Well, 2 for 3 so far. Kishi belly to belly's China and sets up the banzai drop in the corner. Jericho looks like he's about to make the save, but instead hits Hardcore Holly with a chair and Kishi drops on China. Mixed signals there.
Mm. Yeah, it was... I don't know why China was... I mean, I get it, because it's the whole thing of Jericho could have saved China, but chose not to. Chose to attack Holly instead. But China getting dropped by the super face Rikishi was a strange move.
Yeah, I think it was more to make Jericho look bad, because he could have made the save, but he didn't. But why would he get along with them, the co-IC champion? Whatever. Look, this is near the end. We're nearly there.
We're near the end of this weird bit of the IC division.
Right. The final furlong. Wait. More friendly tap. Oh, joy of joys. Barman and his mullet make the mistake of saying he thinks the Acolytes will win at the Rumble. And New Age Outlaws beat him up and throw him out. Rrr. The Acolytes are watching this on a TV and decide that they're really thirsty. I don't know. Some of this I'm so tough. Grr. Barroom brawling. Grr. I chew glass because I'm that hard. Maybe impressive dialogue to them, but it can be very dull as hell when it keeps on going on and on and on.
Yeah, I think they enjoyed doing these skits more than people enjoyed watching them.
Right, this is how they think they look on nights out. Like, yeah. You talking to me, punk? Yeah, can I have your autograph? Okay. Bossman is here, and we get a replay of Test ending the Reign of Terror after Albert attacked him on Raw. Test finished with the stick elbow combo off the top. It's nice. And Prince Albert gets the mic. And I quote, "For years I watched you, and finally you became my mentor, teaching me more about this business than I ever learned in just a few short months." Okay, Albert. No wonder they gave you the gimmick of guy who couldn't speak English when he came back in 2013.
You know what this means, though? This means that technically, NXT is thanks to the Big Boss Man.
My God.
Because Albert was one of the... Albert main trainer for NXT. And if Boss Man trained Albert, technically, Boss Man is NXT. Just going to let that sink in.
That's a good one, yeah. I have nothing to add, but it was a good point, Tom. And believe it or not, crowd doesn't care about Albert or Boss Man or their lover's quarrel. So thankfully, Boss Man is pro enough to yell, "Shut the hell up," to the crowd who weren't making any noise.
To the crowd who weren't saying anything.
After some tepid action, the ref gets attacked, third time tonight, and they brawl uncontrollably before the scab referees and Sergeant Slaughter come out.
Ooh. This is a feud that is so white hot that a former WWF champion has to try and split them up.
And that's right, Slaughter trained Boss Man. So Slaughter is NXT. Oh no, wait, sorry, that can't be right. Slaughter was too busy in the jungles of Nam.
Definitely there and nowhere else.
Yeah, sorry, jungles of Nam. In 89 for a holiday.
Just remember, playing Jungle Strike on the Mega Drive does not count as national service.
Damn it. By the way, I was reading the Wrestling Observer flashbacks from 95 on for the Blog of Doom, and they were bringing up Cobra and Sergeant Pittman feuding. And apparently the feud originally started with them going that they were in Nam together, and like one of them deserted the other, so now it's back for payback. But then people were commenting, "Wait, you're in Nam together? Hang on. You're in your 30s, so what? You're 12 years old when you're stationed in the jungles." So then they changed it.
Nam.
Right, so then they changed it to Desert Storm instead. But they kept on forgetting. So apparently this promo was like, "You left me in the jungles of Iran." God, I hope that's true. And, you know, Iraq, not Iran, because that was just me being stupid.
I was blinded by a sandstorm in the jungles of the Congo. Where are we again?
Somewhere east.
Somewhere not America.
I hid behind a giant dragon festival that had me taking place. In the deserts of Vietnam.
I saw from the canopy that there was a sandstorm on the way.
The New Year celebration. The New Year celebration in the deserts of Vietnam, which of course is in that country, is in March.
As the wall came down.
The president at the time of Nam was, of course, Gorbachev.
He shook hands with both Ronalds, Reagan and McDonald's.
Reagan and McDonald's. He went, "The wall! It's the wall, brother!"
History.
Oh, God. Anyway, moving on from Plagoon. The Rock and Lillian Garcia are backstage. The Rock says, on one hand, we have a statuesque giant retard who you can't understand what he's saying. And on the other hand, you have Kane. It's all right, I checked. The Rock is allowed to say that word because he's not using a hard R.
Soft R.
Anyway, ba-la-la-la-la-la, smell and the rest.
Yeah.
And Viscera is here. He's not dead. But guess what? The 13 appears. And again, the mood is about to change. What can this mean?
It's now starting to sound like Peter Sinercha doing the talking. It's now starting to cut through a little bit more, which is quite exciting.
Yeah. They really should have gone with the orange balloons being launched, like originally discussed.
every week,
there's
out.
Balloons.
Nothing says menacing like balloons.
The balloon is about to change.
The helium. The moon is about to change.
Comes out. My God, Taz is here. We represent the lollipop. Stand up when you're talking to me, Taz. Oh, sorry.
Can I ask you, right, as the man behind Botchamania, chat me up on this.
Yep.
You know the Taz intro that you created that features
yes.
an Oompa Loompa coming out of the cave as JR goes, it's Taz! Right?
Yes.
Has Taz ever seen that?
No. Taz has said, oh, yeah, I watch Botchamania all the time. But when I was on his radio show one year, he immediately blew his cover, all the people listening, because he went, hey, we've been having some audio difficulties this morning. We'd obviously been on your show if this had been the case. And I went, oh, Taz, don't worry, you're always on your show. Oh, he's not that. You're always on my show. He went, am I? And I went, you lying get it. He's a recurring segment. He was on TNA every week. Doing, you know, the amazing commentary job. And I unironically love Taz.
No, Taz is great.
Smojo doing a scent on Splash, and you go, oh, it's like a small foreign car landing on you.
I miss all the banter you had on SmackDown about Joey Numbers.
God, yeah.
Joey Numbers.
There's one match on... It was Heat. No, not Heat, even Warner. Metal, there we go. With Mike Awesome was on there. And Taz clearly still had issues with Awesome, which... it's completely ridiculous to think about when you. But anyway, that's another story. The point is, Mike Awesome is wrestling, and Taz is just. He's never been more on form. Like, Mike Awesome's like, come on, let's go. Starts clapping, and Taz is like, wow, he's clapping. I don't know, maybe that gives him strength. Who knows? Just insults the dog poo out of him. Oh, it's wonderful. Anyway, enough of this discussion. We'll get to the awesome Taz debacle when we get to it. It's. Viscera versus Crash Holly, Battle of the Super Heavyweights. Viscera immediately throws Crash out the ring. Like, as soon as the bell rings, like, right, get out.
And you go.
Crash Holly tries to put chest with Viz and gets knocked down. Spinning wheel kick from Viz is sold amazingly by Crash Holly, probably because it was a lot of genuine weight knocking poor Elroy Jetson down. And Crash dodges a charge in the corner. He gets the tornado DDT for two as Crash is launched over his head. Referee Teddy Long clearly not enjoying this match, as everyone else is, as you hear him yell, go home, very loudly. So Crash Holly gets on Viscera's shoulders with the big man, swinging him round into a sit-up powerbomb, and ends with a big splash. Again, I'm a big fan of these Viscera 3-minute matches where he just busts his ass, bump, 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 move, 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 and that's great. Sometimes that's all you want from a big guy. I don't want these 15-minute Triple H wank fest.
No, and I thought Crash looked good here as well. Like, beauty of a tornado DDT. Beauty of a springboard missile dropkick. Like, Crash is somebody I can get behind.
Yeah. I don't think the super heavyweight stuff's working for him. If only it was another division he could go into.
The cruiserweight. You are correct.
Oh, God. Update on Steve Austin, so he can legally advertise he's on the show. Dr. Lloyd Youngblood is on the case, so he'll be fine. This is around the time when he really was the man to go to for neck surgeries.
Does Dr. Lloyd Youngblood fancy Steve Austin?
He likes the money he's going to make out of it, I'm sure.
It's just the way that, like, the little smirk on his face as he says, he's a healthy young man, he's well-muscled, very solid bone. Not
yeah,
as...
but you think he's attracted to his... He's not loving him, he's loving his... Look at that skeleton.
Oh, my God. Look at the cartilage on that.
Oh, it's on like neck bone.
But I enjoyed Dr. Lloyd Youngblood giving a State of the Union address, like the doctor on the podium with a picture of Stone Cold's neck going, well, he's all right, but this is buggered.
Yeah, Lloyd fixed God, everybody. Edge, Angle, who else was there? Anyway, there's a long list of people. A Rhino, they fixed. If he was around when Marie Antoinette was having her issues, there'd still be no democracy in France. He's that good with necks. Yes, that was a convoluted joke. It did take me a while.
I got it.
It was Halftime Heat returns on January 30th.
I forgot there was a halftime.
Not knowing. Right, I look forward to not knowing what that was.
Yeah.
Finding out what happened next week.
Because obviously we know...
Halftime Heat 2000.
We know Halftime Heat from 1999 was a future echo of WrestleMania 36. But we don't know what's actually on Halftime Heat in 2000, so I'm up for this.
Yeah. Edge is here. We get replays of Raw as ENC lost to Godfather and D'Lo. Good God. As Christian accidentally bumped into a hoe. I hate it when that happens. She fell off the apron, and Edge, the Valiant Edge, went to check on her, so Christian got pinned. Oh boy, the return of the wacky ENC finishes.
We've had a week away from them. It's nice to hear, nice to see them back at us again.
Exactly. Reunited, and it feels so good. Tonight's taking on Gangrel in the singles match. Edge is rumoured to be judging the swimsuit contest with Freddie Blassie. What mad lib is this? Anyway. They wonder how Edge's new fiance, Val Venus's real-life sister, will think about this. And that's currently the only plot point he's got going from right now. No wonder he was losing the D-Lo. Anyway, we get a lovely counter DDT sequence with Gangrel and Edge, which is very un-Gangrel. And after a dive to the outside, Luna tells Edge something in his ear, and then the rest of the women bounce out to curry favor. Mae Young, the WWF's favorite punchline, kisses him, and Edge loses via count out. To Gangrel, the wacky Edge finish of the week, brought to you by Johns.
This was a hilariously ridiculous finish of just all these women at the same time deciding we're going to try and bribe the judge of the swimsuit competition. Incidentally, right, if Edge and Freddie Blassie judging a swimsuit competition, it's very WWF 2000 or very Joey Janela's Spring Break, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that's a good one, Tom.
Very much a Mad Lib, like you said.
Yeah. Anyway, we move on from Edge and Mae Young's tongues jockeying for position to the Acolyte showing up to the top as everyone leaves dramatically, like they're John Wayne and John Wayne.
Why were they leaving? Yeah. Were they just not like the Acolytes?
I think it was like, oh, here comes trouble, you know, that type of thing. Like, Katie, bar the door, the Acolyte. They spot the New Age Outlaws, and it's probably the highlight of the episode for me, because their mock excitement at seeing them is like, Brad, you're going, oh, man, my dog would kill me if I didn't get an autograph of Road Dog. And Farouk's going, oh, it's Billy Gunn. I can't believe it. I can't do that line justice. If there's one bit of the episode you need to watch, it's Farouk going, Billy Gunn.
What I find funny about the whole bit is that the Acolytes walk in, everyone leaves, they're chatting at the bar, and all this time, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, their opponents for the Rumble, are just behind them playing pool.
Yeah, they see them, but they're like, oh, you know, they're all over there.
We're just going to chill here for a bit.
Wait a minute, I've got two balls left, and I've got Billy, so, you know. They brawl, and the hoodlums from 3 months ago show up to take some bumps. And what bumps they are, with Gunn going through the karaoke machine and someone taking a brutal bump onto an arcade cabinet. God. Bradshaw takes out a Bud Light sign for the Red Sox, I guess because River Island hate. I don't care. River Island. Because Rhode Island hates them. I don't care.
River Island's not a fan either.
Baseball. Yeah, River Island hates you too, Red Sox. And yeah, there were some very impressive bumps here with the arcade cabinet shot and the karaoke machine. It's this, yeah, it's friendly tap, get a plug. They get to do their fantasy of being, yeah, it was so hard, yeah, it was so tough, which apparently Bradshaw believed in real life until Joey Styles, and the Fist of Reality came crashing down. Anyway. 1-800-COLLECT presents The Rumble. And why have I write that? Why have I typed that down? Who cares? Sorry, it's Kane versus Big Show. Why did I even bother typing that?
It's just sometimes it's nice. Just, like, I do that, to be fair, every week. I'll write something down and I'll go, I don't know why I wrote that down. There's one bit that I wrote down that I forgot to mention, which was ages ago. The time has passed, but I think since we are laughing at our own notes, what was it I wrote here? The WWF Divas are doing a signing tomorrow. All the photos show them looking bored.
Yes, that was a thing at WWF New York. It's like all the divas, and it's like, and BB's there. You're like, oh.
But the, okay. Like, if you can find it in this episode, then you get 10 points. It's this. It's the picture of all the divas looking bored. Like, why would you want to go to that signing?
Because titties.
Fair point, woman.
Kane versus Big Show versus The Rock. And guess what? The Rock's book is number one in the chart.
Of course.
It, it wasn't released. It escaped.
It's a bad book. It's such a bad book. But it shows you just the absolute gold that The Rock is at the moment. And the WWF in general. That they can release just a piece of garbage like that. And it's a number one New York Times bestseller.
Yeah. A lumberjack over the top rope match doesn't make any sense. But... who cares, Rocky? If he can get that booked and won the charts, he can make this match work. It's all punchy until Kane gets the enziguri on Big Show. But eventually, Big Show chokeslams The Rock outside to eliminate him. Crowd not happy with that. Big Show mouths off at him, so Rock re-enters and Rock bottoms him. These are some bad lumberjacks. And one of the other highlights of the episode, Rock turns Big Show round, and so he's facing the hard camera. Big Show's upset face as The Rock is about to rock bottom in his hilarious sight. I don't know if you spotted that, Tom.
I did. I was confused as to why a full-powered Big Show, the moment The Rock's arm went under his armpit, he suddenly lost all power to fight out of it. Like, if he was a smaller guy, you could maybe get away with it. If The Rock hit the move quickly, you could understand it. But, like, the Big Show, he's such a joke at this point. Like, gets hooked in for it, and it's just like, this move has just completely just paralysed him, it seems. I can't move! Even though you're smaller than me. It was embarrassing.
In the distraction, Kane dumps Big Show, and then everyone jumps in for a big brawl. Here comes the big pie fight. Yay.
So that was the only reason why we had the lumberjack stipulation, was just a quick way to get to this schmoz, this pre-Rumble schmoz.
Yep. And with everyone going, wow, this is what the Rumble's going to look like. And they do this every year, and it's fine, it's whatever. But you think that'll be the end of the show, right? With those big guys headlining?
I genuinely closed my Google Doc, assuming that was the end of the show.
No, instead, Triple H in the ring shows us clips of last year's Rumble with The Rock and Mankind, Gan Raj. And look, Mankind has his hands tied behind his back. I wonder if that'll come up this year. Anyway, Triple H mentions that in the front row of that match. Like how this fat piece of crap is in the front row for a Triple H.
To which Kevin Dunn goes, cuts a fat piece of crap. He got the shot of the guy.
Camera one.
I think we spotted the guy.
Yeah, and I think he's doing that because he senses the crowd's getting a bit bored. In the front row was his family, crying their eyes out. So he says, don't bring your kids this year, because it's going to beat you up worse than you've ever been. Because a stitch in time saves your family from therapy bills. And Cactus Jack shows up to let us know his kids won't be there. Not because he doesn't want his kids to see what happens to him, but because of what he's going to do to Triple H. Yay, there you go, that's a good line. Cactus says he's not going for trash cans or chairs. He's going to destroy him with thumbtacks and turn Triple H into the world's largest pincushion. Ooh. He says his kids will not be watching the Rumble because they're watching SmackDown tonight. So he wants to give them a sneak preview with Triple H and him brawling. Triple H going for the pedigree through the announce table once more by Cactus countering on the pull-up power driver. And Cactus Manchin getting his whole ass on camera.
Oh, his tighty whities on show for Cactus Jack.
That's right, they're on week 3.
And he's turning them inside out tomorrow. It's fine.
Oh, God. Wasn't even a recession. He's just tight. And we go off the air with Cactus posing in the ring with a giant Triple H sucks Jack's cactus sign in the crowd behind him.
Oh, that was brilliant. I remember that. We'll get to stuff we remembered in a bit, and it's not significant to you, but I always remember that sign appearing behind Cactus Jack as he picked up the belt.
Oh, nice. But that is the end of this week's SmackDown. So as we like to wrap things up, we always go with Tom. What was something you remembered from this week's episode of SmackDown?
Well, I remembered you just choking on your own words just then. I think that was a personal highlight to me. I had to really rack my brain here to think of something that I remembered from this episode. And I think the one thing that I remember is it was the long-winded promo at the beginning. I remember even as a kid thinking, they're talking a bit, and Big Show looks weird. I always remember that for probably the wrong reasons, but I remember that. What about you? What do you remember?
I remember the leg drop off the entrance ramp because, not because I'd seen the episode, but because I had the card of it. And I'm trying to find where it was. As I'm doing this, I actually thought, what were those cards? Oh, there we go. Raw Deal. That's right.
Yes. It was the card game, wasn't it?
Yeah, Raw Deal. Not sure if anyone else remembers this. Sure as hell didn't know anybody else who played it, but even if you didn't when playing it, the cards themselves were very high quality. You got some lovely photos and moves and moments. God, apparently went all the way up to 2006. That can't be right.
Really? That long?
I mean, I'm going. it ceased. Sorry, beg your pardon. December 2007. Bloody hell! I had no idea it was going on that long. Oh, okay.
Blimey.
Well, I had a pack, and it had that card. I went, wow, that looks amazing. I wonder if I'll one day be able to watch it. But in those days, if you didn't see that week's episode of SmackDown, tough titties. Better hope for a replay. So it was nice to finally see it after all these years. As a nice prelude and a appetizer for the amazing tag team table match we get.
See, that was my thing I'd forgotten, which was the fight over the tables in the run-up to the table match. I forgot that Bubba took that beautiful fall backwards and then it'd been followed up with a leg drop as well and got blood through it. I'd forgotten all about that. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. What a great way to build to their table match shenanigan.
Yeah, nice. And if you have any thoughts on Raw Deal, please message me or Tom, because we love hearing about this nostalgia as much as anyone else. And, you know, WF New York, have you ever dined there? Or
oh, yes, we'd love to hear what you ate when you were there. What did you forget from this week's episode?
Edge and the weird, like, all the women love Edge and he's so sexy and handsome. Now that he's unattainable. Ain't that the truth, Tom?
Oh, always the way, isn't it? Always the way. Tell you what.
Oh, you're single? Right. Whoa. You're engaged? Whoa.
Suddenly now we're let me just now put on it. So next week it is Royal Rumble time on the SmackDown review. So I believe you and I owe the wonderful people that listen to this nonsense a watch along, sir.
Wow, you know what? It's such an important pay-per-view, and I've typed about it before for the UK people, that I'm looking forward to it. But also in the sense of, again, I could probably recite it move for move at this point.
Well, we'll blindfold you for parts of it, and then we'll see how well you do.
Yeah. I'm fine. But you know what, Tom? I can't think of anybody else I'd rather be watching it with.
And we will be giving you a watch-along of the WWF Royal Rumble from the year 2000. That'll be on this podcast stream next week. Until next time, he is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Send us some Triple H quotes where he's got popular phrases wrong. That's the new test thing. Love you, bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.